This is Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. Dialogue Conspiracy is a program which shares the political research of Mae Bressel. For almost 10 years of work are based on the theory that government is moved as much or more by conspiracy than by any democratic process. Another Saturday of Dialogue Conspiracy. I'm Phil Kogan, sort of moderating things. Mae Bressel is here beside me, and welcome to program number 85?
86. 86. Check. I think it's 86.
Program 86 in a weekly series, which has gone back, obviously, 86 programs, 1 hour every week, and covered a lot of ground during those times. Mae, what's on tap today? Can you summarize briefly what people can look forward to in the next hour or so?
Yes, I think we'll take a few articles that were in the news this week. The Civil Liberties Union going into the Alger Hiss information, wanting to dig that out now to get back, open that case up for some people. And the mention of Roy Ash, Richard Nixon is sitting at Camp David designing his new domestic program, a part of which I predicted a long time ago on these shows. We did some discussions of what it would be like the next 4 years, and he's called Mr. Roy Ash down there to help him design that domestic program, which is going to be presented to the public in its formal sense. 2 years ago, it surfaced what he had in mind if he was reelected. We'll talk about that. I want to talk about the Billy Smith trial here on the Monterey Peninsula and how it fits in with some of the research I've done and some behind-the-scenes confrontation I had with Luke McKissick, and of course everybody's glad with the outcome. But I wanted to discuss it from the terms of political conspiracies, an attorney who's worked with Sirhan Sirhan and now with Billy Smith, and discuss those cases, some experiences, the one I had with Luke McKissick. And then I brought a letter that somebody wrote to me in September that I never got around to answering. We were so busy.
I was going to just say to you that there's a whole pile of mail which I gave to you when you walked into the station today. Yeah. And I was going to say, oh, gee, May's getting around to those letters, and she's going to answer them right away.
Well, this is what I'm
answering a letter from September. Well, have faith, folks. Keep writing. She's got a whole stack of letters that came in the last couple of days, and they're sitting there, and I guess those will be answered in March.
Oh, no, those that I send out copies of the Realist or information, I'll answer those right away. But if I answer them on a program every week at the Watergate, and things were piling up here, and I never had a chance, we'll try to get to those. The article about the Civil Liberties Union, they're asking the FBI to force the files open on the Alger Hiss case, which is interesting, and on a case which was called Operation Keelhaul at the end of World War II. With the new Freedom of Information Act, which was passed in 1966, it declared that the government cannot have unwarranted secrecy on a lot of matters. And a person is writing a book, Alan Weinstein, professor of history of American studies at Smith College, is writing a book on the Alger Hiss case. And that is far from closed. The Hiss case could take a lot more examination. This is the case that made Richard Nixon running away and his political success, the use of Whitaker Chambers to come down on Alger Hiss, and then the article I did in The Realist, I referred to Nixon and his career and the Alger Hiss case, and I feel that this opening of historians is very important because a lot is locked up, just like the National Archives locks up things on the John Kennedy assassination. The real story of all of the provocateurs, and this was a case of an agent framing Alger Hiss, will be unraveled. The period of the 60s and 70s, someday, America will look back and shake their head when the real evidence comes in about many of these cases. Because
do you think including the Alger Hiss case?
Oh, yes. Yeah, Alger Hiss has said all along that he was innocent, and I believe that this was a real important strategy in the Cold War in this country to help revamp our domestic and foreign policy. And put certain people in power through the Red Scare. So in the paper this week was this article about opening this up, and the archives may hold on to it. The Operation Keyhole, I wonder, is maybe like Operation Paperclip, which was the importation of American Nazis into this country, which is still locked up. And some authors are asking for that because it has to do with the forced repatriation after World War II of Russian and Eastern European citizens. And they were prisoners of war by America and Britain. And many of those came to this country to become espionage agents later. And there are three people asking the Pentagon to release their records on Operation Keelhaul, which happened in World War II. A lot of the secrets of who was brought over here from Nazi Germany are locked in Washington and should be available.
Now, you want the archives open because of the material contained therein about the assassinations.
Yes.
Specifically the John Kennedy assassination.
And there's information there on the Robert Kennedy assassination, and also locked up are papers of James Ray, the alleged assassin against Martin Luther King. None of this is public, available to the public.
Well, how does the Freedom of Information Act relate to the material which is in the National Archives? Does it cover any of that material?
Well, the Freedom of Information Act says that everything should be available except in cases of national security. And yet every lawyer that's tried to get access to all this information on the various assassinations gets an answer, you can't have the material. So
all this material is then classified as pertaining to national security.
Well, it certainly pertains to somebody's security. I know who. They're sitting, you know, in the White House, and it's locked up. It's just a face-saving device to keep people from understanding the power structure of the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Now, people who have listened to this program have written their congressmen, their senators, about the National Archives, and I think you received copies of those letters in the past, and we've mentioned some of those on past programs. What's been the general reaction of members of Congress toward reopening the National Archives?
Well, the reaction of Congress to the archives is like it is to everything else. When they have to vote on whether Abrams should be promoted to the head of the Army, the election, what was it, in the Senate, 87-2, and some were absent, the reaction of people, if they give the president carte blanche to have the war or money for the war, there's nobody in Congress, I say nobody, well, I don't know, who would work to open the archives. I haven't heard one senator or congressman ask for the information on the political assassinations.
Well, you showed me a couple of letters where
they beat
the
around
answers,
the bush.
Yeah, the answers weren't really answers. They were.
That's right. They weren't.
Almost form letters without being form letters.
They just sent the conditions under which the archives are locked, but a congressman wouldn't commit himself. Muskie wouldn't, McGovern wouldn't. They won't take a position on that. The assassinations is just still too sensitive for them to touch, or else they each are conditioned by certain threats, whatever it is. They just don't want to go into that subject. They won't end the conversation by making the material available. That would end it once and for all, because they could say, see, you want to see it, there's no conspiracy. The conversation about conspiracies isn't over, but they won't open it up. There was an article, an interview of Ramsey Clark, one of the favorites of the liberals or the young people. They think he's really far out, and I feel that he is not at all. And the LA Star had an interview with Ramsey Clark, and there's a certain inconsistency with his Vietnam role and with the Berrigans, defending the Berrigans. And in the interview, it was this last week in the LA Star, dated November the 9th, they said, could you tell us about your feud with Jim Garrison and his investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy? Well, Ramsey Clark was putting down Jim Garrison and...
Well, Garrison now, to fill people in who don't know Garrison, he felt he had enough evidence to indicate there was a plot to assassinate John Kennedy, is that right?
That's right. And he.
So what did Ramsey Clark, how did Ramsey Clark handle
this? Well, Ramsey Clark was the Attorney General, and he put down Garrison, and he made fun of his investigation. And
Garrison, then Attorney General of Louisiana?
No.
Or New Orleans?
No, Ramsey Clark was Attorney General of the United States.
Right, but yeah. Garrison,
Garrison was a district attorney in New Orleans. And he wouldn't cooperate with him at all. And Ramsey Clark was the Attorney General at the time that Martin Luther King was killed, who said lone assassin, no conspiracy, the very night that he was killed. And he went out of his way to put down Jim Garrison and to interrupt the trial with Clay Shaw. So the interviewer in the LA Free Press felt there was this inconsistency in what was your problem with Jim Garrison.
LA Star, right?
The LA Star, yeah. And he said, well, Garrison made statements and allegations that were half-truths. And he began to say, he said, Garrison said there was a conspiracy that the Warren Commission didn't cover, that the Warren Commission failed to investigate. But Ramsey Clark feels that they investigated adequately. Then he changed the subject and went on to say that in New York City there was a study of mental illness of children, severe mental illness, and that there are many children, this is what he said in quotes, there are types of children, and I really hate to repeat this, but it sure makes a point that Sirhan and Oswald were. Maybe that's where it comes from. We can solve, you know, to study what it is. He thinks the children have mental illness, poverty, family breakup caused by poverty, family sickness, alcoholism. He said, I think that Jim Garrison knew how the country felt, and I believe when he indicted Clay Shaw, and you see, Ramsey Clark just wanders on in this interview. He hardly makes sense. He says he has no truth about it, but he believes that Clay Shaw was innocent and had nothing to do with the assassination, and that Jim Garrison should worry about the mental illness of Sirhan and Oswald. Well, Oswald had, you know, this is from Ramsey Clark, and, you know, like, you shake your head, but, you know, we've read on the program Oswald's training in the Marines and his electronic radar training.
There's no indication that, was there ever any mention in the Warren Commission that, or any suggestion that Lee Harvey Oswald was mentally disturbed?
None at all. Not at all. He went to...
So there really isn't any basis for Clark's statement.
Well, this is
right. Implication, really.
The only reason is that he's playing a double role, like a provocateur. He's still an agent of the government, which many people realize he is. But he comes out with people, the Berrigans, or travels to Vietnam with McGovern and plays the outward liberal, similar to many people employed by the government that are playing this double role. Ramsey Clark would never open up anything to do with these assassinations, and he passes it off that the boys are mentally ill. Well, the problem in Los Angeles with the Sirhan case isn't that Sirhan's mentally ill, but that the bullets don't match the gun that he was supposed to have fired from. And in the same paper, the L.A. Star, that had the thing by Ramsey Clark, was that ad for a book that we read on the radio show once, if people want to order it, called The Killing of Robert Kennedy. And the address is Echo Park Commission on Law and Order, P.O. Box 26561, Edendale Station, Edendale Station, L.A., 90026. It's $6.98. I don't know if any of you listening have bought that book yet, but it's really interesting. It really is. And in the same paper where Ramsey Clark is saying that Sirhan is mentally ill, the L.A. Star is running an ad for a book which would show Sirhan. The book shows through legal documents and police records and things the fact that there was second gun in the Ambassador Hotel and that Sirhan did not shoot the fatal bullet. So that Ramsey Clark is playing a really double game there. And people want to know, they go on a personality cult that if you have a beard and a free Huey Newton over your desk and you work with servicemen out at Fort Ord that want to get out of the service that are conscientious objectors, therefore you're a liberal. But it turned out that Donald Segretti, Army Intelligence, was doing all these things, and he was flying directly back to Washington and working with the Treasury Department and worked in the intelligence system. So it doesn't mean, the outward appearance doesn't mean anything. It's the way you perform what you're going to do. Oh, Phil, you wanted me to talk about Louis Tackwood.
There are a few people that are expecting him to be on the radio at this very moment.
Yes, we have a disappointment for some people, but you didn't announce it ahead on the air, did you?
No, just to a few people privately, and I guess now is the time to let them know that Tackwood, I don't see him anywhere around.
Louis, where are you?
Louis is not here.
No, I thought we had a treat for you today, but hold on, it'll be coming. I am in contact with Louis Tackwood. And I think we've mentioned him on at least 20 shows on KLRB. I think he's one of the most important persons walking around this country today in terms of power structure. If you don't like what's going on, and if you didn't like that particular election, you don't like the people in office, there's still something you can do about it. And Tackwood surfaced once, had a press conference, made allegations about the Justice Department in Los Angeles, the police department, the state justice, and the national, that are all linked together. One reason he may not have been up, he was supposed to be up this weekend. When I spoke to him, he was heavily trailed, and he didn't have much money. And he didn't know whether to take a plane or the bus or cabs, because he has to lose his traces. The LAPD follows him all the time. And it may be that he couldn't get on the transportation that he was coming. He was to arrive this weekend.
Yeah, well, we'll try and get him up here, though.
I'm sure he's going to do what's safe, and he's not going to come at a time, you know, where he thinks he's followed.
Well, Tackwood says he was a police undercover agent, right?
Yeah, he was for 9 years, and now he's at Warner Brothers making a movie about the CIA with Marchetti. Victor Marchetti of the CIA is going out to Warner Brothers, and it seems that the studios are getting a little angry at the amount of movies coming out against the mafia. You know, we will have Louis Tackwood as a guest, but I think now it wouldn't be good to announce it because his appearance in town will be by surprise at some time, and he comes and goes and doesn't like to leave a trail, you know. He doesn't like to be tailed, so he'll be here.
Okay. Just wanted to get that on for the benefit of those who are expecting him to walk in and make his presence known.
But
he ain't here.
Yeah. But if you keep listening every week, he will be here. I wanted to talk briefly.
Sounds like a come on.
But, it's got to be, of course. We've got to be. I want to talk about the Nixon plan to shake up. The White House was assistants were summoned to a conference at Camp David, and I brought in the article just to mention it briefly because I got about 6 phone calls this week when it was in the Chronicle and the San Jose Mercury. It had to do with the fact that Roy Ash from Litton Industries was called down to Camp David to make organizational changes in the cabinet, in the running of the government with the cabinet members. And in the article that I did in The Realist, the issue why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped, persons remembered the mention of Roy Ash in the article. On page 30, and I'll quote it, it said, "This year, 1972, is the most important year in American history. Provisions have been made to eliminate the outdated Constitution. The new version of democratic rights does not resemble anything but a fascist dictatorship. A new cabinet, designed by Roy Ash of Litton Industries, would trim away every department except those of defense, treasury, state, and the Justice Department." Now, this little cabinet arrangement has been designed for a couple of years, but Richard Nixon had what he called a tax reform, the American Revolution, but he couldn't present it until after the election. It was done by Roy Ash, too. Because the people would get angry. And the cabinet reconstruction consists of Department of State, Department of Treasury, Department of Defense, and Department of Justice. And then all the other major cabinet departments would be reshuffled. Now, the idea was to make it work more efficiently, but all the civil rights people will be resigning. They've been asked to resign. Every member of the cabinet has been asked to turn in his resignation. And the plan is a much closer, tighter control. And the thing that frightens me is that the department, for example, that takes care of the ecology, the resources, when I read a list of the people that contributed to Richard Nixon and the people who were involved with the espionage, funding of the money, particularly that group in Houston, Texas, and I mentioned last week, I think, that lawsuit about them having a plant up in Idaho that's being contaminated, and they're throwing zinc into the water, and the fish are dying. And there was a suit before the Justice Department against their company polluting the water and the natural resources of Idaho. And this particular firm gave Nixon $100,000 plus, a lot more, for his reelection. And the suits were dropped off, and the Justice Department hasn't done anything for 6 months. And that came out again this week. And up in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and the automobile factories, I have a list of I don't know how many cases of anti-pollution cases that are going now. And Marie Stans, the fundraiser for Richard Nixon, the former Secretary of Commerce, would offer these people positions on the ecology boards if they would donate to the campaign of Richard Nixon. And Roy Ash is the last person to be concerned with ecology, you see. And they're taking away all these things and combining them into a very tight structure. And the people who funded Richard Nixon will get positions under these departments. They'll be accountable only to the president. And along with Roy Ash shaking up the government was an article that Key Biscayne this week, that the foreign policy makers were meeting with Richard Nixon. And it said Richard Nixon met with his White House aides, H.R. Haldeman and John Ehrlichman, working into the night on Thursday on the foreign policy structure. Well, Haldeman and Ehrlichman know nothing about foreign policy. This is really frightening because, you see, I know that Nixon gets his instructions. And these two men came out of that G. Walter Thompson advertising agency in Los Angeles. Ehrlichman was in charge of domestic affairs the last 4 years and completely blundered that. It was disgusting. So now you have Haldeman and Ehrlichman staying up in the late hours of the night working on foreign policy structure, and then it goes on to say no State Department representatives were present. Now, I keep pointing these things out. Now, people may say, what has this got to do with conspiracy? Because we used to talk about the evidence of the conspiracies and the specific assassinations each week before the Watergate arrest took place. But the arrest of the men at the Watergate and the news that followed exemplified what I was trying to say happened in the process of assassinating people, the way you lose your trails, the way you run your offices. And I have written in that article in The Realist the succession of Richard Nixon to become president through the act of assassinations, and that the man who has the office takes orders or works with these people so that you can see Haldeman and Ehrlichman working on foreign policy. No State Department. They're all of those departments' cabinets are really washed out, and he's working with a team and Kissinger, and he has a private team that decide what's going to happen in this country. I read that Pepsi-Cola opened up in Russia. You know, all of Nixon's team are going to get the first franchises on this foreign trade, you know? They'll carry their big business to China and Russia. Did you see that today? Pepsi-Cola hits the Russians. You know, the biggest contributors to Richard Nixon, the Republicans.
Yes, we should watch to see when it's going to China.
Well, it'll be there, and then there'll be the golden arches from the...
Moscow Golden Arches, yes.
The Moscow Golden Arches. Well, I think the cabinet thing is important with the way the government's going to be shaping up and who's doing the shaping. I think I worry about that because it certainly isn't, in my mind, to the best interests of the domestic programs that we could have that Richard Nixon has in no intention of developing. I got one letter this week from somebody who mentioned Zodiac Press. Do you get the Zodiac Press here, the news service?
Not anymore. We did it for a while.
There was a review in it, the Washington Star News by Virginia Armat. And there's a book review called La Fabulous Jackie, a book by Christian Kafarkas, I can't rename a former valet of Onassis. And the book is published in Paris. It's not in this country. He wrote La Fabulous Onassis, and he's done one on Jackie. And in the one on Jackie, the book review says, he says the following: soon after the funeral of JFK, Onassis offered to initiate a thorough investigation for Jackie. You know, Onassis was the first friend of hers that came into the White House right after the assassination when she came back from Dallas. He wanted to study the assassination to put Jackie's mind at rest. They had been close friends since 1959. After a couple of months' consideration, she agreed. This is from this particular review. Onassis then hired a team of four detectives who investigated the assassination for 19 months and, in effect, disposed the conclusions of the Warren Commission and give the names of the real murderers. After she received the 27-page report, Jackie consulted with her closest friends and sent a copy of the report to President Johnson. You know, she never would talk to him. She hasn't seen him and never would have anything to do with him after the assassination. The next morning, she received an anonymous phone call warning her to keep the report unpublished. The report is now locked away in Onassis' private safe at Gilfoda, G-L-Y-F-O-D-A, and it's protected all times by guards and a burglar alarm. And that was the review that the study exists. And maybe it would explain why she went there for protection. You know, after a while, the Secret Service wasn't to give her... I think her children get protection, but she doesn't when she remarried. And she gets a lot of all that she needs, you know, with Onassis. Maybe she felt threatened. You know, a lot of people wondered about that relationship or marriage. But after he began to probe her, investigate, maybe she felt threatened.
That's an unusual and interesting book. You haven't seen it yet,
No, it's only in Paris. I'll have to write to people. I have friends over in Europe, and I'll try to get a copy.
If there's any other reference to the... assassinations. Well, the obvious thing is you wonder what's in that book, or what's on that paper, what's on that report.
Yeah, then there was another, the elections went by so fast, we didn't talk about the district attorney in L.A. There were two men running for district attorney down there. One is, his name is Joseph Bush, and he's a protege of Evel Younger.
The other is Vincent Bugliosi.
Vincent Bugliosi. Bugliosi prosecuted the Manson case, and Bush the Sirhan case. And the Sirhan, I don't have respect for either of these men, but of the two, one's the protege. I say Bush is to Evel Younger what Agnew is to Nixon. You know, they're that close in the same ilk. And Bush was attacking Bugliosi. Bugliosi didn't run on the campaign that if I am elected, I'll open up the Bobby Kennedy. But the Bobby Kennedy has to be opened up in the next year or so because the evidence is becoming massive and the material's mounting up about what happened down there. So they're sitting with something very heavy. But Bush can sit on it heavier than anybody because he represents Evel Younger, who was the district attorney at the time. So in the campaign last week before the elections, Bugliosi was being attacked by Bush by saying that if he's elected, he'll become another Jim Garrison of New Orleans. He didn't say he's going to open up the Bobby because he didn't want to call attention, but he says he'll become the new Jim Garrison of the New Orleans district, who was criticized on the John Kennedy inquiry. And so he got himself together what he called the Truth Squad to accumulate evidence on Bugliosi. Well, that's a new twist because Garrison had in New Orleans a Truth Squad that financed his work that he couldn't do as the DA, you know, do investigating.
Now, Bugliosi is no longer with the DA.
No.
Bush asked for his resignation.
Yeah, yeah.
When he won.
Yeah, that's right. And now last week he lost just by a few counts. They were up all night. It was very close. And Bugliosi lost, but in the campaign issue, the Garrison issue was raised by John Thorpe, the chairman of this Truth Squad, who was talking to criminal lawyers, and he said, "We don't want Jim Garrison tactics in Los Angeles." Now, it's funny that after John Kennedy was killed, people questioned the Warren Commission report, and Jim Garrison arrested Clay Shaw. Following that, Robert Kennedy was killed. And right away, Evel Younger said, "We don't want another Jim Garrison. We'll have this thorough investigation with this Truth Squad. We don't want another Jim Garrison." Well, now L.A.'s going to end up with one because he did to the Sirhan case what Earl Warren did to the, you know, there was no report on the Sirhan case, but the trial certainly didn't cover the story. So they accused Bugliosi of wanting publicity to go into, they didn't mention Bobby ever, but he was seeking publicity and becoming another Jim Garrison. Well, the more famous the case, the more scandalous it gets publicity, you know. To attack him because he wants publicity is ridiculous. He's talking about, you know, the evidence probably. And I know he didn't run it as a campaign issue, but whoever was the DA is going to have to sit on that this year, you know, because it'll be coming up.
The pressure on them to stop sitting is increasing, too.
Yes, it's like a time bomb down in L.A. It's mounting, and I'm waiting for that movie to come out, The Second Gun, because a visual picture of the killing of Robert Kennedy is better than all the books. People are used to the visual picture.
Okay, we'll be right back with part two of Dialogue Conspiracy after we take a break to identify the station.